Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
You made it. You made it to the end of the week. It's Friday. That means it's Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And at Free for All Friday, we talk about whatever I am interested in talking about. Because as Adam Sandler said in The Wedding Singer, well, I have a microphone and you don't, so you will listen to every word I have to say. Then again, of course, you could change the podcast channel. You don't have to hear every word I have to say, but I hope you do. I think you will find it interesting to expand your knowledge even further beyond our theology and apologetic realm we normally cover here on the podcast. Let's expand our knowledge and insights far away, maybe to a galaxy far away, a long time ago. Well, if you know what I'm talking about now, surely you do. I'm talking about Star Wars, a film that greatly moved me as a child, still influences me as an adult. It's a multi-billion dollar industry thanks to the Disney Corporation's acquisition of Star Wars and everything that's a part of my beloved childhood that will soon be assimilated into the Disney Borg-like structure as they get Marvel and everything else. So we're talking about that today. And if you really enjoy listening to this podcast, having fun on Free for All Friday, and learning about our faith and how to defend and explain it throughout the rest of the week, I hope you will consider making a donation to the podcast at trenthornpodcast.com to keep it going. For as little as $5 a month, you can get access to bonus content, bonus interviews, and all other kinds of great things. And for just a little bit more, you can get your very own Council of Trent t-shirt that I have seen people wearing to my talks, not in public yet, but maybe one day. So check that out at trenthornpodcast.com. Now, onto the topic today. Wanted to talk about Star Wars. I'm not sure. Every now and then I go through these spurts when it's late at night and my wife and my kids go to bed and I do a little bit of work on my laptop, a little bit of reading. But then when I'm out of gas, I like to watch YouTube videos on all kinds of random things. And maybe you're like me, you get stuck in these particular genres of videos that you just have to watch. So recently my genre was watching, I alluded to this a few days ago on the podcast about how I watch the old reruns of To Catch a Predator. I know I said before, obviously I pray for these depraved individuals that they will repent of their sins and find God's mercy and forgiveness and pray for the other victims they may have. But I hate to say it, the Germans have a wonderful word. German's just a great language because they have words for things we don't have in English that are very perfect and needed, including the feeling of joy at another person's comeuppance or suffering, that would be Schadenfreude. And when you see a person who is intent on molesting a child get tased by the police, you know, as they try to run away from Dateline's Chris Hansen, well, how can you not feel a little bit of Schadenfreude, even if you feel bad about it later? So before that, though, a series of videos I was watching for a while were videos from fans of Star Wars and other commenters online talking, trying to ask this question. What happened to Star Wars? What happened to it? That you get to a certain age, and if you're like me, my age, you know, 5, 10 years earlier, you know, and upwards, you have people that Star Wars was something that's very instrumental for them. Now people who are a generation above me, like the Gen Xers, and even some of the, probably the baby boomers, or at least kind of the bridge between those two generations. Star Wars is a big deal for them because they remember going into the theaters and seeing this, and it completely blew people's minds. It's so different from anything we had seen before. May 25th, 1977, Star Wars is released, and back then it's called Star Wars. It was not called Episode IV, A New Hope. It was just simply Star Wars. And people hadn't seen anything like it. Go back and look. You know, it's easy to do so on Wikipedia to see what films were being released in the 70s, particularly in the sci-fi genre. I mean, you had dystopian movies. You had stuff that, you know, you had the other films, you know, stuff with disco soundtracks. There are a lot of like other gritty crime films, things like that coming out of the 1970s. Kind of bleak, you know. 70s is kind of a, you know, bleak time for people. For others, might have been more of a psychedelic time. I don't know. And yet Star Wars came out and it was just a completely different kind of movie. It was this uplifting space opera, an epic And the reason it was so successful, the reason that Episode 4, A New Hope, is still my favorite, obviously, is my favorite Star Wars movie, and it rivals, it's probably number one for me as being one of my favorite movie of all time. That's a high mark to pick. How could this film be my favorite? Now, I'm not saying that makes it the best movie of all time, or that it's a cinematic masterpiece or anything like that. I mean, you know, you go to AFI, American Film Institute's top 100 films, and every year they, you know, change it, move things around, but Citizen Kane is always number one. And Citizen Kane is just a really boring movie. I'm not going to get around it. It's not a movie to really enjoy, but it is probably like the greatest movie in the history of cinema because it was so groundbreaking in its storytelling and its use of film angles. All that put together made it a very groundbreaking film in cinema. But just because something's a really good movie or the best movie stylistically, historically, doesn't mean you enjoy watching it over and over again. So for me, my favorite movies are ones that had an emotional impact on me when I was younger and have stuck with me and still stick with me, and I can watch them over and over again and get a lot out of them. And Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope is that. In fact, I know objectively, that Empire Strikes Back, or Episode V, Empire Strikes Back, the sequel to Star Wars, is the best Star Wars movie. I know it is the best. You credit that a lot to Lawrence Kasdan being involved in the screenwriting process for Episode V. Lucas is funny, and we'll get to this later, as to the pluses and minuses of having George Lucas involved in your Star Wars films. I know that it's the best, and it's just wonderful character arcs. The action is amazing, and just the dynamic you have between Luke and Vader and Luke's journey here, perilously getting close to the dark side. It's a great film. It's the best Star Wars film. But Episode IV, A New Hope, stuck with me, and it stuck with people who went and saw it May 25th, 1977. Because really, what made it work was that George Lucas knew how to borrow previous things that worked well in film and literature and storytelling. That is what Lucas was able to do well. What Star Wars is, Star Wars means a lot to people, just the same way Lord of the Rings means a lot to people, because it follows a very simple story arc, and that would be called the hero's journey. So the hero's journey is, you know, an archetype in literature, in film, all kinds of stories, going back since stories were first told. Joseph Campbell wrote the book A Hero with a Thousand Faces. And in all the dynamic epics, the hero basically follows this same path. And so if you tell a story and it follows this kind of model, it's going to be a successful story, at least if it's in the adventure genre, the fantasy genre. But most stories, even ones that are more mundane, usually follow this pattern. Here's how the hero's journey works. You begin with the hero, mild-mannered, in a world that he knows and understands. And then he receives a call from a wise stranger, or a call from someone who is previously unknown to him. He rejects the call, suffers consequences, then says, no, I'm going to go on this journey. He goes on the journey with the wise mentor, encounters challenges along the way. Sometimes he is faced by the antagonist or villain, challenges the villain, is defeated, has to regroup, suffers a defeat or death, if you will, is then reborn from that, encounters a final confrontation, and usually along the way he's given some kind of artifact to learn how to manipulate, manipulates it correctly at the end, defeats the villain, and then in the following action returns right where he left off again. And has completed his hero's journey. And if you follow that format, that is what happens to Frodo in Lord of the Rings. That is what happens to Luke Skywalker in Star Wars. You could look online. They're all most successful fantasy adventure genres. Chronicles of Narnia would be the same one. Follow the hero's journey. And everyone wants to have that hero's journey. And that's what was great about Star Wars. You could identify with Luke Skywalker. He's not this perfect perfect protagonist. And that's what makes film, cinema, stories. You have to have a protagonist and an antagonist that you can identify with. And Luke is someone you can identify with. It's someone who can be a bit cocky, a bit immature, wants to do good, wants to do the right thing, sometimes impulsively, and learns lessons along the way trying to do that. This ordinary person caught up in extraordinary circumstances and rises to the occasion to become a hero. And that's something we all identify with because we're in very ordinary circumstances in our lives. You pay your bills, you go to work, you hang out with friends. We have the ordinary and we desperately want the extraordinary in our lives. And that's why I really love our Catholic faith, because through the grace of God and what God calls us to, a lot of times it can be very, very extraordinary. And that's good for us. And so that's why I think Star Wars has such a big impact on people, because it borrowed from, and not just Hero with a Thousand Faces and the Hero's Journey, it borrowed from swashbuckling pirate movies and Flash Gordon serials. So, you know, the old Flash Gordon sci-fi serials. Taking the best of all of these things, putting together. So instead of now you're sailing around on pirate ships after buried treasure and you're engaged in sword fights with Captain Hook, you know, on the ship, you're flying around in spaceships and you're engaged in lightsaber duels. But it's still a lot of the same principle. Also, something else with Star Wars that made it so popular, at least, you know, in the original trilogy, the first Star Wars, Episode 4, was this, a lot of the plot was inspired, if not heavily borrowed, from a 1958 Akira Kurosawa Japanese film called The Hidden Fortress. So this is an excerpt from an article at BBC.com talking about the parallels between Akira Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress and the original 1977 Star Wars. So in Kurosawa's film, the Civil War, so remember in Star Wars you have a war, Civil War taking place between the rebels and the Empire. In Kurosawa's film, the Civil War takes place in 16th century Japan, and the duo are ragged peasants, the tall Tehei and the short Matsuishi. Like the droids they inspired, so these two are R3PO and R2D2, they can't stop squabbling as they traipse miserably through a desert in the aftermath of a battle, and like those droids, they split up before being captured and reunited. Eventually, these two Japanese peasants are dragged back into the conflict. They have to help a bearded general, Toshiro Mifune, who is, he's Obi-Wan, escort Princess Yuki back to her homeland, just as the droids help Ben Kenobi escort Princess Leia to the rebel base. The difference is that Tehei and Matsuishi aren't loyal servants, but opportunists with an eye on the princess's gold. They may be C-3PO and R2-D2, but they're Han Solo and Chewbacca as well. And so Lucas cobbled these different elements together, wrote the script, and he had to produce it on, you know, a shoestring budget. This is also what happened with Steven Spielberg with his early films. And because they had limited resources, they had to be very creative in what they came up with in order to make these films successful. So you put all this together. Oh, there's something else that I love that Lucas borrowed, and this comes into Star Wars in the Death Star trench battle. And that, I mean, that is that scene when I first saw it as a child, it was just embedded in my mind. It was so exciting. Here you have the X-Wing fighters, they're dropping like flies, you know, and finally it's up to Luke Skywalker, Red 5, pulling into the trench, and you've got to make it all the way to the trench to hit this one port on the Death Star to blow it up. Why would they leave that weakness there? I guess Rogue One retcons that. I think I talked about this in a previous show, retroactive continuity, as to why that was, I guess, an intentional weakness. I don't know. That scene is actually borrowed from an older World War II film called Dam Busters. This is actually something real in World War II, that in order to destroy dams, the Allies had to do a very specific bombing run. So they would fly their planes. In order to destroy the dam, they would fly at the dam from the side of the water, not flying into the dam straight on, because I think there was anti-aircraft guns and things like that. So they would fly along the lake or reservoir, and they had these special bombs that they would drop. They used flashlights to determine they were at the correct speed and altitude. And you would drop these bombs, and they would skip along the water. Because here's the thing, if you drop like a torpedo, the dams are usually protected by torpedo nets. So the torpedo could not hit the dam if you dropped it too far away. And if you dropped it too close, it'd overshoot the dam, you wouldn't hit the target. So you had to precisely fly the plane and drop your bomb at the right moment so that it would skip literally over the water and hit the dam and blow it up to blow up the target. Now, does that sound familiar to you? The shaft is ray shielded, so you'll need to use proton torpedoes. Good luck, and may the force be with you. So exciting, all the elements put together. And what made Star Wars really good, though, by the way, is having Lucas's creative genius restrained by other people. That's what helped a lot. The original Star Wars, the original script, this is what it's called. The Adventures of Dirk Starkiller and the Journal of the Wills, Volume 1, The Star Wars. That is what he wanted to call it in the first place. And the creative team said, nah, it's probably not a good idea. We're just going to call it Star Wars. Good idea. And so Dirk Starkiller became Luke Skywalker. You might think, Dirk Starkiller, that's a stupid name. Well, is Luke Skywalker really any better? But I mean, it still works. Also, I was watching a behind-the-scenes documentary of Star Wars Episode 4, and really, Star Wars was saved in the edit. You know, Lucas had these grand ideas. He put these characters together, built this story arc, at least within Episode 4. I'm not really sure he thought it out completely through Episodes 5 and 6, because when Leia is revealed to be Luke's sister, that makes some stuff in Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back really icky. I'm not sure he completely thought that through. But the original, they showed what the original scene would have been in both the opening of Star Wars, just the original opening, and the original ending before the medal ceremony where Chewie doesn't get a medal. You know, Wookiee lives matter too. What's going on there? Why didn't Chewie get a medal? But in that the trench battle scene, the original one was long, disjointed, the pacing is off. It was bad in the original script. But when you see how the editors went in and edited the trench battle, they trimmed it up so it's just crisp, firm. I think that in the original, Han Solo blasts away Darth Vader to save Luke, and then Luke goes on for the trench for like another minute. So the pacing is off. Whereas in Star Wars, Han Solo comes back, and it is just glorious when you have a rugged character who abandoned the good cause come back later at the end of the third act to make things right. That is why in Avengers Infinity War, when Thor, not saying he's the rugged character who abandoned people, he was, you know, doing his mission to help the part, but an unexpected character you think is dead from the perspective of those in the Wakanda battle in Avengers Infinity War, that when Thor appears in Avengers Infinity War, I still get goosebumps at that scene. When he, Groot, and Rocket Raccoon show up, they've got the blasting score going, and he sends out Stormbreaker to finish off the weird zombie werewolf dog things that Thanos' children have sent out to fight the Wakandan soldiers. And then he goes in and says, "Bring me Thanos!" And so this, you see the same feeling when Han Solo comes out of nowhere and saves Luke, blast Darth Vader, Luke blasts a Death Star, wrap the scene, we're done. Most movies that you see, very, very few directors are given the right to edit their own films. Now, Spielberg, superstar directors, they've earned that right and they'll say, I want the movie exactly how I want it. Okay. But most directors do not get the right to edit their film. And there's good cause for that, because most directors are blind to the faults in their films. It's the same thing for me as a writer. That's why I am so grateful here at Catholic Answers. I have Todd Aglioloro, Catholic Answers Press. I have a woman who's specifically designated to edit my books, who usually she edits 80% of the books that I do, and she points out the flaws in them that I can't see because I'm the author. I just cannot see them because I look at them in a different light. Someone else needs to see them. So Star Wars was saved to the edit, including the beginning. I mean, so the end is iconic, but the beginning of Star Wars is just as iconic. You have the title crawl to explain things, but after the title crawl, it is all summarized in the first 5 seconds. The first 5 seconds, it's summarized what is at stake here, because you have the rebel ship fleeing. There's lasers flying at it, like, oh, what's happening to the Tanti IV, you know, the rebel ship that's trying to escape? And you see it's being pursued by what? A giant, massive Star Destroyer. And so you know, here are the little plucky rebels against an overwhelming force trying to get them. It's not great news. And it's told, and that scene right there is told, there's no words, no dialogue. You don't need someone saying, whoa, the Empire is really big. I don't know how we're going to outrun ships like these. Like, no. The rule in storytelling is this. Doesn't matter if it's a book. Doesn't matter if it's a film or a TV show. Show, don't tell. You can tell a TV show and movie is bad when they start dumping exposition instead of just showing you what you want to know. And so that's what we have in Star Wars. And it's all of it put together, that how the editing saved it, brought together these elements, as well as other elements put in the film, like John Williams' score. It made it it made it timeless. There were people originally, when it debuted in the 70s, they wanted Star Wars to have a disco soundtrack. Do you realize how terrible that would have been? How awful that would be if Star Wars had a disco soundtrack? Because it would be a 70s movie. But with John Williams' score, it makes it timeless. That is why I am completely perturbed when people think, you know what would be a great idea for this Catholic church? We should make it look like a bunch of other buildings from the 70s. That'd be a great idea. Except our faith is timeless. Our faith persists. I believe that if you ever construct a new Catholic church, for me, it should either look like a basilica from medieval Europe or a adobe mission from 16th century Spain or California. And it would just be timeless if you did it that way. Don't make it conform to this world. Make it have a timeless beauty to it. So I said what happened to Star Wars. I talked about the good. Where's the bad? I'm going to skip over the prequels. That might be a separate episode here. Because the prequels are bad. What went wrong with the prequels, and there's a great documentary about episode one. Just look up episode one documentary. I forget the, I'll bring it up here in a second. In this documentary, it shows where things went wrong. So it's not The People versus George Lucas. I don't think that's it. But in any case, I remember it was a behind-the-scenes documentary, and it showed that Lucas had just complete creative control over the prequels, and he would kind of demand things, and people were afraid to want to stand up to him. And so you could see by the end when they had the film, it was disjointed, long, and clunky, and weird, and it didn't flow. And that's because in the 70s, Lucas did not have the clout he has today. So a creative team restrained him with the original Star Wars to bring out the best that he had put in it. With the prequels, he was not restrained. And that included selecting Haley Joel, his selection for the child actor to portray Anakin, his use of CGI, the way he wanted to tell the story. That's what went wrong with the prequels. But here's the thing, I appreciate they were at least trying to tell a Star Wars movie and have that same idea behind it. What makes me incredibly peeved is what's happened now with the new trilogy, episodes 7, 8, and 9, that they said, we're going to learn from the prequels. It's not going to be like the prequels. Oh, it's definitely not going to be like the prequels. Somehow you managed to make it worse. Episode 7, The Force Awakens, I could tolerate. It's something, if it were on TV now, I would probably watch it. The thing I didn't like the most was that J.J. Abrams was just trying to play as safe as he could. People were mad at the prequels because they weren't like the original episodes 4, 5, and 6. So what did they do with episode 7, The Force Awakens? It was not an homage. It was basically plagiarizing the original Star Wars. And I didn't like that. Like, okay, you have a person with a mysterious past on a desert planet who leaves it on the Millennium Falcon, joins a resistance to fight an evil empire that has a gigantic super weapon, and you manage to destroy the super weapon at the last minute, and this young desert person seems to have a connection to the Force and a connection to a member of the empire, member of the bad guys, who also has a connection to the Force. It's like, oh my gosh, it's the same movie. So I was disappointed when it came out, but I can appreciate the differences there. I think Kylo Ren is actually a pretty good villain. Like when he shows up looking for BB-8, and of course you have a lovable droid that has important information. It's all the same. That when Poe Dameron shoots Kylo Ren with a blaster rifle, and Kylo Ren, because you remember in Empire Strikes Back when Han shoots Darth Vader, he catches the blast in his glove and doesn't affect him. But here, Kylo Ren stops the blast in midair, stops this laser pulse of energy. That was pretty cool. I'm going to give you that. So there were a lot of elements that were fun. The story moved decently well. So I appreciated that. I thought that was good. Not great, but good, okay. But I was still mad that it was an homage. Like, all right. Not even an homage. It felt plagiarizing in many points. Like it was just a rehash of the original movie. You don't have to do that. But then in episode 8, a movie that I detest Star Wars The Last Jedi. And here's the problem here. You don't have J.J. Abrams now directing. He'll be back for episode 9. I don't know if he's going to fix it. But J.J. Abrams sets up mysteries in Force Awakens. Who is Snoke? Who is Rey? How are Rey and Kylo Ren connected to one another? Sets up these arcs. And then Rian Johnson, the director and screenwriter of episode 8, The Last Jedi, does not follow them at all. Just is like, they don't matter. Who cares? In fact, the whole point of episode 8 is I'm going to subvert your expectations. Ooh, you think this is going to happen? Oh, actually, it's this that's going to happen. You think the guy that they met in the prison on that casino planet is going to help them? Oh, surprise! He turns out to betray them. Well, who couldn't see that coming? But there were so many times along episode 8, I was just wondering, what are they doing? They're not even telling a story that makes sense here. Instead, what made me mad about The Last Jedi is it seemed like the director, Rian Johnson, and the producer, Kathleen Kennedy, were just trying to promote identity politics. That what they were doing is, you know what? We want to make sure that Rey is perceived as, she's a strong woman character. And so we need to make sure that, you know, she is, it's time now. Star Wars can't just be for men anymore. We don't want Star Wars to be just completely male-oriented. It's time for a woman to take her place in Star Wars. And that would be fine. I'm not opposed to having a strong female lead. Ripley in Aliens, Sarah Connor in Terminator, even Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, the most recent Wonder Woman movie, was really good. But the problem is when you're trying to promote an ideology rather than tell a story, the story is going to suffer in that regard. So the example of this when it comes with Rey is that she's too perfect. She is what has been called in the fan world a Mary Sue. So a Mary Sue, it goes back to Paula Smith coined this term back in 1973, wrote a parody of a Star Trek fan fiction story called A Trekkie's Tale. And in there is a character named Mary Sue who is just perfect at everything. She can outwit Spock. She's the only woman who can resist Kirk's advances. And she does everything perfectly and then saves the day at the end. And it's just so uninteresting because it's such an unrelatable character. And you know a movie is boring when you see a character and you can't see any human traits in this person. You can't see yourself a little bit in them. It's boring. Protagonists and a protagonist is boring when they don't have a weakness you can identify with. And an antagonist is boring when they don't have a motivation you can identify with. So when you watch films like Thor: The Dark World, Malekith, whatever his name was, the elf, whatever, who was the threat, and I don't even remember, it was such a forgettable movie. Thor: The Dark World is unforgettable the same way Justice League is unforgettable with Steppenwolf. What's the motivation here? I don't get the motivation. Why are you doing this? Why should I care? Avengers Infinity War is super memorable because, okay, I see where Thanos is coming from. He's totally wrong, but I get his motivations as a person, why you would do that. When a villain is just bad for the sake of being bad, hard to identify. For the same reason, a protagonist who is just good, not good for the sake of being good, but just who is so good they have no flaws whatsoever, then you can't identify with them. And that's Rey. Like when you watch the original Star Wars, I can identify with Luke Skywalker. I would probably put my foot in my mouth if I were in his shoes. And I would do a lot of dumb, impulsive things where I'm trying to learn along the way because I have done that in life. We all have. We identify that to become a hero is hard work and you got to take your lumps and fall down and get back up again. That's Rocky. Imagine if Rocky never got knocked down in the Rocky movies. It would just be a really boring film. But that's what you have in Star Wars The Last Jedi. You have here that in Last Jedi and Force Awakens, Rey is basically Mary Sue. There is no explanation for why this junk trader on Jakku is able to outfight a Sith Lord the first time or second time she's ever held a lightsaber before. And remember, when Luke Skywalker faces Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back, he gets his behind handed to him. That is the nature of how to grow. That's the hero's journey. You got to get knocked down first before you climactically and finally get back up in the end. And that's not what we see here. When Rey gets into the Millennium Falcon, she's never flown a fighter before. She's never flown a spaceship before. And yet she's perfect at it. She just knows exactly how to do it. How is she able to do that? So that's my one problem there. The main character you're supposed to identify with is not very identifiable. It's not very enjoyable. And Rey could have been. Rey could have been. The same for John Boyega's character, Finn, who was the most interesting part of Last Jedi and Force Awakens. That could have been an amazing part of the story to make it different from the other Star Wars films. That we have here an ex-stormtrooper who doesn't want to be a stormtrooper anymore. Because before, the stormtroopers, they're just Jedi fodder. You know, we make jokes about how they can't hit anything and that the heroes just slice through them, and we don't care because they're faceless. They're just goons. You don't care. But now we see a stormtrooper there. They have a story there. A lot of them are children who are abducted and then forced to do this. And it's completely undone in Force Awakens and Last Jedi when you have Finn just shooting up all these stormtroopers and like, wow, I got him. Dude, those are your brothers, man. You guys were all kidnapped as children. You're not upset by this? If it had delved into his character a bit more, so that here's how you could have fixed Last Jedi to make it more like Empire Strikes Back. You end the movie where Kylo Ren asks Rey to join him, and Finn leaves the Resistance because he's done with all of this. Finn leaves because he doesn't want to fight on either side. He's seen the trauma of both sides. He's done with it. And you think Finn is left and Rey is on the precipice of abandoning the rebels. End. That would have been good. Instead, you get this dopey thing where all the rebels are almost basically killed. Finn tries to sacrifice himself, but he can't because Rose sacrifices herself to save him, even though he was sacrificing himself to save others. Almost all the rebels are killed. They're all on the Millennium Falcon at the end, hugging and laughing and going into hyperspace, even though almost everybody's dead. Shouldn't you guys be really sad about this? It doesn't make sense to me. And the thing that really doesn't make sense, I know I'm coming to a close here, but you can appreciate this with me, is Holdo. Oh man, I can't stand Admiral Holdo in Last Jedi. And I felt like when I said before about identity politics, Rey was one example of that. We need a strong female character. Last Jedi really irritates me because Holdo is that example. So instead of the movie when Leia, who should have died when she was blown into space, and she ends up Mary Poppin flying her way back into the spaceship, back into the Mon Calamari cruiser, who should have died, which would have been a fitting way to end Leia's role in Star Wars now that Carrie Fisher has passed away. You know, may she rest in peace, pray for the repose of her soul. You know, that would have been the way to end it. Instead, you have Admiral Akbar, one of the most iconic characters in Star Wars, just killed off without really any acknowledgement. And then leadership's transferred to Admiral Holdo, who the lesson for Admiral Holdo in Last Jedi, and you can see this identity politics coming through, is that Poe Dameron gets reprimanded because he's a man who mansplains, and he's a man who thinks he knows everything and he's always right. And he needs to learn to listen to the women around him because you should listen to women, believe women. And it makes no sense to me because Holdo has this elaborate plan to for everyone to be saved in a scene anyways that just seems so clunky to me, that they're trying to outrun the destroyer and they're just flying this way. It's all very boring. Holdo has this plan and Poe he leads a mutiny because it seems like Holdo is leading them to their deaths. Instead of just explaining to everyone, here's the plan, everybody. No, it's, Poe asks, I just want to know what's going on. And Holdo says, of course you do. In this such rude, sarcastic way of addressing someone. Whereas there's another scene like that in Empire Strikes Back when you have Leia, who is a strong female character, explaining to the rebels how they're going to get off Hoth. She says, two X-Wings are going to protect a transport. And the guy says, two X-Wings against a Star Destroyer. And she could have said, of course you want to know. Shut your mouth and get in your X-Wing. That's what Holdo would have said. But Princess Leia says to them, the ion cannon will clear a path for you so you'll be able to get around the Star Destroyers. There, she explains the plan. She's a good leader. She has everyone buy into it. And she's a strong female leader. No one will contest that. And yet, in Episode 8, it's just completely disjointed and out of place that it values once again. And this happens in Christian movies all the time. You care more about the message you're trying to send than the story you want to tell. If you focus on telling the story well, the message will come through. That always has to come first for people. People, at the end of the day, life is hard. They don't want to sit and be preached at. They want to be told a good story. And so to tie it back in, of course, with what we do here on the Council of Trent, I'd recommend for you that if you want to share the gospel, telling people a really great story is the way to do it, either film, literature, or telling your own story. How God's grace, how the ministry of the church has worked in your life, and how you've gone through the hero's journey, that at one point all of us have to in our faith journey. We have a comfortable life around us, and then we're asked to accept the call. Sometimes we refuse, and then we we follow up on that, and then we try to do the good. We stumble and fall in our attempt to do that, but we learn from our mistake. We are picked up again by the grace of God and continue forward to persevere to the end. I mean, all of our lives are basically a hero's journey. So I hope you will allow the Holy Spirit to work through you to continue your hero's journey in our journey of faith. And I appreciate you stuck with me here on the Council of Trent to let me vent to you a little bit what I've thought about Star Wars recently. You might disagree, and that is just fine. It's a free country. We can have different views. If you disagree with me, or if you agree with me, you can always leave a comment under this episode at trenthornpodcast.com, where you are able to make a small donation to keep the podcast going. Stay with me for next week, because we're going to have some more great episodes, got some good topics tucked away from you, and some premium content for our subscribers who make a donation to the podcast. You all are great. I hope you have a great weekend. And as I always say here on the Council of Trent podcast, I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.